budget committee. And I will pop out the agenda in front, but I think we're good to go on this one. Thank you. I don't have that job. Okay, so may we stand for the Pledge of Allegiance?
All right, raise your hand, face the flag, hand over heart, ready to begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And may we please have roll call?
Vice President Altamirano,
Here.
President Leija,
Here.
Director Spadalis,
Here.
Director Treba,
Here.
Director Murphy.
Here.
Okay, next item is public comments.
We don't have anybody in the waiting room.
Okay.
No submittals.
Okay, so our next item, number five, action and discussion items. And this will be Kirk.
I'll do a brief intro, but this will mostly be Kirk. So
Okay.
welcome to Budget Workshop 1 for fiscal year 26-27. So I know all of you have been on the board for over a year. You've been through this process before. What we like to do is multiple budget workshops and then, well, multiple budget workshops with one being focused on what we like to refer to as like the more, I mean, none of the budgets are easy, but a lot less variables with the budgets presented tonight. And then 2 weeks from tonight, we'll come back and do budget workshop two, where we focus on the water and the sewer funds. And then budget workshop three, at that point, we kind of bring everything together, present one final budget, and then our goal is to have the budget adopted at the second meeting of May, which is a little bit different in the past. Normally, we've done budget adoption in June. We think, well, we've heard from comments from the board over the last couple of years to have a little bit more buffer, more flexibility with adopting the budget. So we think with doing the budget in May, if there's any issues that arise, if we need to push the budget adoption, then we have some flexibility in June. So budget workshop one today, we'll focus on the general fund, the fire, weed abatement fund, and the solid waste fund. With that, Kirk.
So
I'm sorry, before you start, can I just ask, our next workshop meeting in 2 weeks,
in 2 weeks, yeah.
will that also be at 3 o'clock?
So traditionally, because there's a little bit more involved on water and sewer, we've done them at 2:30. Because I think in the past when we've done them at 3, it butts up right against the board meeting. So staff and I will talk, but I will say tentatively we're going to schedule it for 2:30 just to allow maximum flexibility.
Thank you.
All right, so this probably won't take the whole hour, but I want this to be open communication. If we have notes from director comments from previous year on things to see from the budget and certain things that you've made comments on, so we save them. This obviously is a working document, and so there will, like, I didn't fix all, I know there's typos in here as far as formatting and certain things go, and I work on this pretty much every day when I get time to in between other normal tasks. And so especially the general fund budget has a little bit more of a complexity to it because it does affect the other funds. So we can go into that, and I'll go kind of over reminders for that budget as well and kind of how things work. But kind of like what Brian was saying, here's kind of like our tentative timeline. So the goal would be, you know, today start things, kick them off. In 2 weeks, then we'll go over like the water and sewer funds. So those are kind of the more bigger budgets, more complex, a lot of more moving pieces, you know. And then with May 7th being the final kind of budget workshop where we kind of put them all together, do one more review, have a lot more fine-tuned numbers, because we still have budget, we're still going to have budget meetings every week after this, pretty much, depending on the need. And we still evolve the numbers. So for example, I still look for active quotes, like I'm waiting on a quote right now for certain things, and I try and update them and get this budget as detailed as possible. So that way we have the most accurate information up to the time when we adopt it. The same thing with estimates, right? So right now, this budget has the GL balances are actually through February, right? And by the time we issue this in May, I'd like to try and have at least March, maybe April's numbers in there, so that way I can kind of have more accurate projections, right? Because sometimes I'm trying to take numbers from February and I'm saying, hey, look, I've had 8 months out of the year done, right? And how much if I annualize that, I'll say this amount was 8 months divided by eight times it by 12, then I might be able to annualize something. But sometimes things aren't so flat line curved like that. Like for example, our property taxes, we get two big tranches of money, every 4 months during the year kind of thing. So then those timings vary. So there's a lot of kind of tweaking with these, and we try and do our best to get the most accurate numbers. And I try very hard to be conservative. I don't want to overestimate revenues. And then I don't want to underestimate expenses either, right? So we try not to build ourselves a problem later on. So we'll kind of go into that. So then, first shop today, 2 weeks, April 16th. May 7th for the third and final one, and then we'll look for the plan is to adopt on May 21st, right? So then obviously we want to have everything done before our new fiscal year starts in July. But with this timeline, what Brian said, we've kind of taken feedback from the board and we've moved this up. This is the earliest I've done the adoption since I've been here for that. So any comments that you have, like shoot them over to me. If you're looking at them before, shoot them over to me. If you have any other questions, if you want to bring up discussions, interrupt me today. I have no problem with that. This is a collective working document. I take input from Brian. I take input from everybody across the district on what we're looking for. We come together, we kind of usually come up with kind of like a goal. We add stuff to the budget and then we kind of see if that's feasible or not, right? So then we kind of say, hey, let's put stuff on there. And then sometimes I pin stuff up for the next year. I'll be like, hey, look, we don't have a budget for that this year. Let's leave some notes. We're not going to budget for that this year. We'll try and do it next year. And I try and leave a breadcrumb trail, right? So I want this to be like a helpful kind of historical document as well. So there's a lot of stuff in the back end of this document that you guys don't see because this is the clean version technically. But often the Excel in this thing is totally different. I try and do trends. I try and show a variety of history on there so that way we can kind of look at things and see where we're going. And then I take other outside information from the internet and try and see where prices on certain things are going to go and how they're going to affect us and stuff like that. So a lot of things going on. Just a general overview. And again, like Brian said, Dan and Leslie, you guys kind of have gone through this a little bit before. But just kind of an overview. So the general fund and the fire fund are technically our general fund. It's a little confusing, but those are in our financials that are done by the auditor. Those two are considered one, but we budget for them kind of separately so we can kind of see the detail, right? So what funds the general fund is property taxes, right? So we get property taxes in, and that pays for our contract with the county for CAL FIRE, and then the excess revenues are kind of more for either savings or right now we utilize them for other utilities practically. So that fund doesn't have like cut, we don't send out those rates to, that's not like bills that customers are paying, right? It's technically a bill, but it's in the property tax roll. So it's based on their property tax. And there's a bunch of different types of property taxes that I'll kind of give you a brief overview because I wanted to detail that out a little bit more this year. But we'll go over that a little later. And then there's central services. So what we say is the general fund is kind of handling a lot of admin stuff and has certain things that all of the other funds kind of utilize, right? So they utilize the front customer service staff. So we say, hey, look, customer service staff, together their cost to us, like their annual salaries, their benefits, they work on a variety of different funds. They take calls for water, they take calls for sewer, they take a majority of their stuff is actually calls for trash. So then we say, hey, it's not that fair to have one fund just pay for those customer service reps. So we kind of say, hey, look, water, sewer, you guys get this certain percentage share of those costs. And so then they will pay revenues to the general fund kind of as their portion of those kind of shared services. So when we say like central services, it's kind of like costs around here that aren't particularly just to one, like a fund or one activity. And then we say, all right, here's the pie. Let's divvy it out. Here's your share of the costs and stuff like that. And those are estimates. And so we try and do our best to say what those percentages technically should be. Right now, we use ones that are derived from our cost of service study. And so then that's kind of like our best guess right now of what we think each fund is respectively like kind of in charge for. So that's when we say essential services. So that's like a revenue to the general fund from the other fund paying their share. And so our goal obviously is to have those costs be accurate as possible because we don't want to overcharge a fund or undercharge a fund. So we try and work on those and make sure that that's accurate as possible. The general fund has costs for like debt service right now. It has costs for the streetlights as well. So the general fund is in charge of the streetlight payments for the electricity on the streetlights and the maintenance contract with SoCal Edison. Right, so right now we're on, I believe, what is called an LS1 agreement with Edison. So for the lights that we have right now, they're owned. The pole itself is owned by Edison, and we those pole the energy costs for those are estimated, right? So they don't have like a meter, an electric meter on those poles that say, "Hey, look, you use this amount of electricity. Here's your bill for that." It's based on a predetermined rate, and then they estimate the amount of electricity that we use, instead of putting meters on all those poles and all those different locations. So that is funded by the property tax as well. So if a pole goes down and a car hits it, Edison is in charge of replacing that pole, not us. So in that rate, we have like a maintenance thing as well. So if a pole goes down, we have the website that we can go list the cross streets, stuff like that. We can report it to Edison, and Edison's in charge of doing that. If we were to own the pole, we'd have to do the pole replacement. We'd have to buy the pole. We'd have to go through insurance on whoever hit it, try and get the money funded for that and all that kind of stuff, and then do the pole replacement and all that kind of jazz. But right now, it's all on Edison. We kind of just have the contracted rate of having them maintain that stuff. The goal of other things in the general fund is to help fund additional discretionary payments, which is towards our CalPERS unfunded liability, which is pension liability, right? So we have a pension goal of having a what's called funded. So, right, you estimate for pensions. In a nutshell, you take all the people that are in the plan, you estimate how much liability you have for each of those people, and you total it up, right? So you'll say, oh, I think, this person, based on their age, their gender, they're going to live until they're this amount. This is how much their pension is probably going to be. So it's going to be this total. We're going to pay for that person and stuff like that. And it estimates the total liability they're going to have to pay. And then you take your current assets that you have in the plan, because we always fund every payroll. There's payments to the plan. They go into a trust. We can't touch them, right? And those assets then earn interest, and they offset those costs, right? So there's a gap. It's like, okay, you have this many assets in there, but you have this much of future liability. There's a gap there. So you try and fund it based on how much you think those assets are going to earn to then cover all this liability. And it's called funding your it's how well your plan is funded. And you want that plan funded. I think our policy is, oh, don't quote me, I think it's like 80 or 85%, which is a really good solid number for I'd have to go look that up, but it's a really solid number for local government to have, because you don't want to get that plan severely unfunded, because then when it does, you have really, really large payments to that plan in order to keep the benefits for your employees that are retired. Otherwise, if that plan does go under and you don't plan accordingly, you could put retired individuals from your local government in financial jeopardy, technically, right? Because there's people that, I think it was like Yellow Trucking Co. or something like that in the news a couple of years ago, where they went under, but their employees didn't know that they weren't funding their pension, and so their pension benefits were not nearly what they were anticipating, kind of thing, because that employer didn't fund the pension, and so then it was not secured by anything else. And when they went under, those people didn't receive it. So a lot of them probably had to either unretire or retire later and keep working. So we kind of try and take those seriously. We try not to be overestimate those, but we try and take those very seriously, because we don't want that to happen.
And how frequently do you review that then over the year, just to see where you're at?
Every year we are required to update that estimate on our financials. So it's obviously an estimate. It's an estimate based on what people are earning as far as interest goes, right? So you estimate how much money you're going to earn, and then they always estimate it based on I forget what it's called, but it's like a mortality schedule too. So they'll say, okay, how long
Like
are
an
people?
actuary kind
Yeah, it
of
is an
thing.
it's done by a certified actuarial. CalPERS handles it for us, and we pay it. And we have one that is specifically for us, and they do it. And then we also have an outside consultant that does kind of a funding report on the side based on our policy, and so that's done annually as well. But
So
yeah.
I would assume if something kind of catastrophic happened to the economy, then you would review it again and make adjustments or.
Yeah, I mean, technically they do it because they send us bills, and you maybe remember when the DMs are brought to you last year, and it's going to come up probably in July. I think it's July, but it's like a CalPERS sends us like a payment plan, so we can pay either monthly or we can do like a lump sum payment for our kind of true ups for that plan and that estimate, right? But also it's kind of quirky. It gets a lot more complicated because say for example, their investments do really, really well. The next year, you won't see like a reduced cost because they kind of average those over, I believe it's 5 years, and they try not to just have all these super spikes. Oh, we did great, so don't pay as much. Or we did terrible, so now you owe us way more. So they kind of try and stagger those over 5 year periods, I believe. So it becomes a little more complex than that. It's always a moving target, though. Like as soon as you think you're funded, you could be underfunded. Or as soon as you think you're underfunded, you could maybe have a good year and it looks better. And so it's always a moving target, so you just got to make sure that you just don't forget.
I didn't know that about the pensions. Don't pension funds like CalPERS don't they? If somebody's getting in arrears, though, don't they? No, don't they know about it? Don't they
The
know about it?
employee wouldn't know about it until they retire, right? So there's normal costs. So there's two different type of costs. There's normal costs and the accrued unfunded liability. So the normal costs is what's done with every single payroll. So every employee that gets a paycheck, they'll see on their pay stub what I'm contributing to CalPERS. What Kirk is talking about is the annual true up of the actuarial that's done. And I think when I used to do the DMs, I would try to simplify it. It's basically like the minimum credit card payment, right? When we make that payment, it's not to pay off our unfunded liability. It's essentially our minimum credit card payment to ensure all of our retirees get all the benefits that they've earned over the years. So if the company is not paying that minimum credit card payment, the employee wouldn't really know about it. I mean, I don't know how they would know about it. I don't know if that was something that get flagged in an audit. Maybe that would get flagged in the audit. So if the employee's not reviewing the audit, I don't know. I know he referenced that with a company that used to contract CalPERS. I mean, not to get off a side tangent, but my mom was an employee through CalPERS, and that happened to her company where her company did not pay the unfunded liability, and she hit retirement age, and her benefits that she thought she was going to get was reduced like in half. So, I mean, knowing that working here, like, I would never want that to happen to our employees. So the normal costs are important. The actuarial costs are important, but what Kirk is also talking about is this additional thing that we did a few years ago, which is these additional discretionary payments. So that is a proactive way to continuously fund our pension to hopefully offset some of those minimum credit card payments in the future, right? So if we can contribute just a little bit more today, we can hopefully offset some of those payments in the future.
Almost like making one extra mortgage payment a year or
Yeah,
something. Just
exactly.
something to
No, I
splash the
didn't.
pot to
Yeah,
be proactive. Yeah.
I just didn't know that. I
Yeah.
thought that, that CalPERS was
There'd be a consequence or
I mean,
something. Yeah, that
I
they
believe
would know.
they are the biggest like pension plan in the US, but then it's also like what was I gonna say? I believe that someone would catch it. The auditors would technically kind of give you a warning that
Yeah.
your percentage is
They
too
probably
low.
couldn't get they probably couldn't get too far in the rear before a red flag would
And I
get.
believe that probably happened. I think Mr. Murphy has said this before, that like one time CalPERS basically was like, hey, we did really good, so you guys don't have to fund us. You guys can use it for other purposes. But then that backfired because when they don't keep collecting that stuff, then maybe people don't keep expecting to pay it, and then it puts them in a worse financial position.
Previously, the investment fund overperformed, and the legislature decided to issue a CalPERS holiday for the local municipalities and to add benefits to existing retirees. And then when that surplus wasn't there anymore and there was a correction, it's like now we have this unfunded mandate.
But yeah,
that has been a problem ever since.
Yeah. So we just try and make sure that we pay attention to it, and we're trying to be proactive. And based on the funding that we currently have, we are in a good spot, but we just make sure we it gets attention. So, on the general fund, so the revenues for the general fund are property taxes. It's those central services, which are other funds pitching in. And then we also have money that's in the general fund that's excess property taxes, or it's money that we've received for like fire mitigation. So those are restricted ones, but those all earn interest. And then I keep track of, if a money starts restricted, that interest that restricted money earns stays restricted, right? So it's so we keep track of all that. So then I, we have a bunch of money in LAIF, and we have some money in other investments, and we diversify. So every month when those interest payments come in, I say how much share of this LAIF interest do you have based on your amount in there, and then we allocate it and we make sure it all goes in the respective pools. We are lucky that our interest has been doing fairly well to years past. I am a little hesitant to say that it's going to grow, so I would say that it's going to be a little flatter this year, if not reduced. So I've kind of budgeted about 90% of our revenues of interest. I think I under budgeted this year, so I'm hoping we exceed our expectations. And I was looking at this today, but I think so LAIF is very short term investments, and that's what most of our money is in. It's a pooled investment fund, but we do have some diversified investments that we started doing, gosh, I believe just over a year
I
ago, that
think
you guys
July of 24 is when we started that.
something like that. But we started doing more long term investments in CDs and treasuries, and we started when the feds were starting to evaluate when they're going to start cutting rates about a year ago. We jumped into the market and we kind of purchased some longer term investments that their rates would stay locked in, right? So then we're trying to hedge our bets, I guess, if you want to say, and make sure that we're good. And those we can always sell. They're marketable securities. We can always sell them if we need to. It just depends on their fair market value. Like if we were to take a loss, like if interest rates went up, then obviously maybe those wouldn't be as ideal. So we might have to sell it at a discount rate per se, right? But we're still earning interest off of all of them. They are all not at risk, per se, for investments. So we still have, I believe the number's probably about $8 million in kind of that balanced portfolio. And then the rest of things are with LAIF, which LAIF has a lot more shorter securities. Those I think go out like 90 to 100 days. So LAIF gets affected by the market a lot quicker. But that's kind of the market outlook. And I do know, I do believe the shorter term rates, when I was looking at it, were expected to drop a little bit. But because of what Trump is doing, I think some interest rates have stayed higher, but I believe those are more longer term investments that are staying higher. We try and look at those, try and do our best. But in the end, I'm still going to budget a conservative amount of interest for what I think is going to come in. So that way we don't, I'd rather, under promise and over deliver kind of thing. So we'll see. But that market changes. My finance app, buzzes my pocket every day saying, oil's at this, oil's at that. And we just try and do our best. But luckily, this year is the highest interest I've ever seen us earn since I've been here. And I know, like in COVID times when money was very easily accessible, the interest rates were, around 1%. Right now, our portfolio is averaging a little over 4, if I believe. And the money market is probably somewhere sub 4, maybe 3, 3 and a quarter, possibly, I think, is what we're in. So it just depends on the time. But so good help for us, though, on that. Other things for the general fund are operating expenses. So we have some labor council that we use as a resource if we have any kind of I guess labor law questions. We have a budget in there to have a outreach and kind of support on that side from a specialist. We have some administrative oversight, which I believe is tempering off this year. We are looking at, we put a budget in for a financial consultant last year or for this current fiscal year, but we're trying to keep that. And the intention of this financial consultant is to help me with evaluation of kind of our current CIP project schedule and to see at what point if we're going to need to issue a bond and really have that outside resource and planning on saying, hey, look, where do we want to be as far as these projects go and where we're at now, what needs to happen, you know, like if there's a certain time, because once we go do a bond, if we need to, you only really want to do it once you don't really want to go through it and then go through it again later. So we want to make sure that we kind of plan accordingly and then don't do any rush decisions, but also be informed of, hey, look, if we need to do these projects, you know, interest income's not going to cover it, you know, or what's our gap on rates? Do we need to fund it with a bond and then adjust accordingly? So that's one of the main goals of that. And that's just to be proactive so that way we don't get ourselves in a pinch.
How does that financial consultant work then? Is that like on a retainer or when you pick up the phone, then the
Yeah, it would be like that. There's a scope of services with it. And then there's kind of like, for example, an initial kind of evaluation where they kind of get set up. And then there can be kind of a much smaller fee later on for them to kind of update our outlook every year and keep it going on like an annual basis. And then obviously, if there's other, you know, side projects, like making sure that like when we make that kind of agreement with them, that we have this kind of main purpose or these main highlights of what we're looking to get out of this information and help. And then usually there's like a flat rate generally that they put in their proposals that if you have something that's outside that scope, okay, that you go. Because I don't want to get surprised and say, hey, look, they usually give you like a range and say, hey, look, to do this. And I don't want to get surprised if someone quotes me a project's going to take 40 and then they try and charge you more. It's going to be kind of like, hey, look, this is what we're pretty cool.
And just to comment on that, so the financial consultant that Kirk's referring to, we have an existing relationship with them. It's the same person that helped us do the debt for the building 3 years ago. It's the same person that drafted our debt management policy. It's the same person that drafted, I think, our investment policy a couple years ago. Do we not use him? No,
No,
he did our pension management policy, the
that's
one
fine.
that Kirk was referring to earlier. So we've worked with him periodically the last 3 or 4 years. So we're still entertaining that. And, you know, I know Kirk is a one-man team. I mean, I'm a CPA by trade. I don't do that as often as I used to. You know, when we have engineers, we have an engineering team and engineering consultants. Kirk doesn't really have that level of support. So just something that we're entertaining.
Also this year, planning ahead, this is one of the items that I actually didn't have in your initial draft, but we're going to start budgeting for the cost of service study. So right now, when we start going through rates and looking at rates, we have kind of like a 5-year prospective plan that we use for cost of service study. So we're looking, they take a long time. So they take about 18 months to go from start to finish. So we need to start ahead planning now. So I'm going to start budgeting for that for this year so we can get it started. So that way we don't have to rush and get it going later on. So that's a very, very important document. Also in the general funds is computer equipment. So if you look, I'm still looking at quotes from our IT, but there's going to be some substantial needs for our computer equipment to be upgraded, which is kind of like our servers and our firewall. And I don't know if you've heard, but cybersecurity is really a tough is a big thing nowadays, especially for you infrastructure. Infrastructure could be seen as a targeted thing to hurt you, especially cybersecurity. If someone wants to close down their plant or shut it off and cut off water supply to a certain area, you know, we could be susceptible. So we want to make sure that those precautions are in place, right? But also, some of our stuff is very outdated, and IT obviously it can have kind of like a 5 to 10 year cycle. But we have like servers, and they need to be replaced. And the firewall, it's old; it needs to be replaced. It's just a necessary thing. I'm working on quotes. I do believe it'll be a little less than this, but I'll update that number as I get more accurate information. But we kind of evaluate that too. And there's kind of a cool thing that Tony and I have been going to these they're called Ernie, but we like a couple weeks ago we went over to Aruba and they had a certain cybersecurity consultant come in and they talk about what you can do to protect yourself. So we have been going to actual trainings and classes to kind of learn about this, especially as we start working with the ops department on kind of the SCADA and what stuff they're putting in that's IT savvy and what can be at risk. So it's been a long, thoughtful process as far as doing that. Another big thing that we've been looking at is an ERP program, which is Enterprise Resource Planning, I believe is what ERP stands for. But it's basically our accounting system and our payroll system. And with that, potentially, I've been exploring, and I went to an accounting nerd conference back in February, and I talked to a few vendors, and it could potentially replace our North Star software, which is our utility billing software. So depending on what programs we think are the best benefit for us, then we could end up removing North Star and replacing kind of the whole accounting and billing program per se. Because right now we don't have the ability to scan documents into our accounting software. So if you want to go look in the general ledger, which is like our history of numbers, you would have to go look in the history, say, oh, it's for this number, it's for this amount, and it's this bill on this date. And then you'd have to go to the filing room, and then you'd have to go find it through the folders. Or depending on how old it is, you'd have to go out into the shed out there and go dig through boxes. On the new ones now, you kind of scan it in. You can code it. You can have electronic approvals that automatically happen. You can have certain controls in place that are more security. And then it's also, if I go in there, I could just click on that number and be like, oh, hey, here's the invoice. Here's what it was. Here's the notes, all this kind of stuff. Also, you can have vendors send you stuff directly to AP emails, and then it'll get put in technically like a queue. So then it'll be like, hey, look, based on this SCE invoice on this account, this is a street light. It'll basically pro forma all the information. And then you're just like, yeah, it is. That's a street light invoice. We agree. Let's put it into AP and we'll get the invoice paid kind of thing. So they're phenomenal, but they are a lot of work. It is a
Question.
very big project.
I know that since I came on board, I was looking into or asking about maybe doing an app so where people can pay their bills through the app system. Have you guys, is this something that we can consider in the budget, or is that something too much to ask for?
Right now we have a payment portal, right? But that's just online. I don't know on an if we've considered an app per se. I don't know what it would cost to build that, but right now I know it's just really links to go to
Yeah,
invoicing.
the payment portal, that's what I use every month.
We looked into
Very
like
easy to work.
a text messaging thing where like, hey, your bill is ready, pay here kind of thing. That was kind of cost prohibitive. Do you recall that? The
Well,
only text message.
the one I was looking at is budget friendly, but as far as like depending on the tech, that was through Invoice Cloud, charge us for texting. And that was like, I think it was gonna be like $1,000 every time we sent a message or something, which was not cost benefit, but there's other programs.
The issue director is we have like a payment I guess merchant, right? So if we were to do an app, it would have to be compatible with that payment merchant or completely change our payment merchant. And the thing about the payment merchant is that's currently compatible with our billing software. So it's one of those things where like if you were to go through that process, you could potentially not have compatibility,
Right.
and then you got to change downstream processes. So that would be a concern for us.
I think a Bighorn Water has it on their app, but when you click on it, it does like hours and sends you
It
to,
just sends you, yeah.
yeah, sends you to the payment, which is pretty good, you know.
As long as it
I could,
yeah, says by a
I
phone.
could try and look
Yeah, and
into
that's
it.
always
I could
been
try and look
better.
into it for
Okay.
you
So I have
on
a
things.
demo I just sent forwarded, and it does have you could either put your own merchant in there or use them. But some of them will send you back redirect redirect you back to
Redirected,
the
yeah.
page, but also in a way where people can see their last bills or even make a report or contact the office or something like that to kind of get more updated. Or if there is a water leak, something where it's like an emergency to contact. I'll forward you because I did get a demo last year on it and they did give a quote and it was around 15, 20,000, something like that. But I
Yeah.
don't, especially comparing it to the other agencies in the area, because it's GoGov, it's the same app that's being used by JRPD, the city, and the other, yeah, the other Rubo Water District. But is that something that we could potentially look at or even put in the budget for next year? Or
I
mean,
mean,
we
I'll
can
definitely look into it for you. Absolutely. I have no problem with that.
I mean, we can look into it, and then maybe it's a little premature to put it
Oh
for the
yeah.
budget for next year, but we can look into it and maybe report back to the board and see if that's something that they're interested in placing in the budget, either via a budget amendment or then the following year's budget.
Yeah, the biggest thing with that is how we would get that data in there from like North Star, and then how it would link with the actual utility billing software, right? Or how you would find that information, which would be because it's like a separate app, right? So all the what happens, right, is Rosanna goes through, she reads the meters, she exports that to a file, which then gets imported into North Star, and then North Star makes these bills, right? And then it gets sent out. But it's how do we get that data to that app and make it in sequence, you know,
Right,
right?
yeah. Because I know Edison does it too, right? Where we don't even get our bills in the mail anymore. You just go on
Yeah,
Edison, you get the
Edison.
app. And again, it's more of like, I mean, helping us catch up to what other agencies are
Yeah.
doing too, right? More for convenience.
I know Edison does, like you were saying, Edison lets you go back in and look at your past, all your past bills or something
I
like
know
that.
it's, I'll send you the link to the same agency that is using that. So that's just something, I'm sorry, reminded me of it when you right now that you mentioned about counting and being able to go back and review your stuff.
If we could get an estimate of the percentage of customers for which we have digital contact information, that would be helpful.
Yeah, I like the portal we have now. It works really well. I mean, it never jams up. In other words, I get my payment through without hassling,
Yeah, and I'd love to get
through
as many
everything.
people on ACH as possible if we can person that, or else that's the best.
Yeah,
But
I'm
that's a different
having fun.
story.
It's on. I just haven't set up
Give me a
the
discount. Give
exact
me a
email
discount on
addresses
my
that
water, and
you're
I'll go ACH.
You've already got a
You're already got a discount
email
on your
addresses.
fees. You don't pay any fees.
Because when you just go
Well, I
into
mean, if you have somebody's, I can tell you my experience with Southern California is okay. I get emails from them, I get text messages from them, and I get mail from them. So if we're gonna send somebody an alert or tell them how much they owe, we would need some kind of method to contact them. We know the address, but we would need like a textable phone number or an email, and then some understanding of the preference.
Absolutely,
And we have customers that predate cell phones.
Okay.
So
Well,
we may not have so so if we if
well,
we
no,
could
I
if
know what
we
you're
could
saying.
have some understanding as to the percentage of customers, you know,
Right
roughly
now,
like
those ones
is
are
it
good.
30 or 50 or 70 where we have an email or a cell phone.
But this would be something people would opt into, right? It wouldn't just be
Generally,
like.
you would probably just automatically set them up and then they'd be able to opt out, right? Kind of thing. Or you'd say opt into, just depends on your customer. So.
Because you know how sometimes, and I know we're kind of getting off the subject, that you'll get like an email or a text saying your bill is ready or statement's ready, and you can just go into it and then you can do whatever you want with it.
We do that is
Yeah,
we
that's
already
what I
have
got
that.
now.
We have that email, and it comes from I think what's called Invoice Cloud. So we do have that. You can opt into email only and not get a pay per bill. So that functionality is already available. But to Director Murphy's point, I mean, we have a lot of renters. Like people always come and going. So I mean, our customer service team does a great job of trying to get current contact information. But sometimes it is more difficult than others.
Yeah, they've been pushing that, especially with new customers as well. So, the last thing on the general fund, I believe, is then this year, just for all funds, the COLA, it's not estimated on this as it says, but the COLA this year is 3.28%. It's outlined in the last MOU that was discussed. And then there's a possible step increases for other employees who are at a top of range.
Yeah, I was gonna make one quick comment on the general fund. So if you look at the detail, just a couple of things I wanted to highlight. So we've heard some comments from the board the last year or so. So the line item 24, mileage and conference expense, we bumped that up a little bit. I know some of the board members are interested in attending, outside conferences, Aqua, for example. And it had never been something that maybe previous iterations of the board have been interested in doing, at least during my 7 years. And now that's kind of different. So we did bump that up a little bit. We have a new line item. We haven't numbered it yet for outreach events, community action, right? So that's been, a big priority for this board, for myself over the last few years, is to be more outgoing in the community. So we're trying to be involved in different events, and with that, we have certain knickknack paddywhacks that we give out, and that comes at a cost. So it's a very modest budget, but you will see that on the budget. And then the only other thing I wanted to highlight on the general fund is we are in an election year. Generally speaking, we've had appointments in lieu of elections, so we have not paid election costs. Oh, geez, I think the last time we did was in 2020. But to Kirk's point, we're a conservative in nature that usually runs about $30,000. So you'll see that on the budget for this year. So, okay, back to you.
We'll move on to kind of the fire and weed abatement fund. Again, this one is not an enterprise fund, right? So these revenues don't come from utility bills. They come from property tax, right? Whenever we have like new development, right? Usually they buy into capacity for, the water and sewer system, but we do have, buy into the area for fire mitigation fees, which is $815 right now for a single family residence. And then on our commercial, we do 41 cents per square foot. So when, a big commercial building gets put up, when they finalize and pay through their capacity fees for us, those go into a fire mitigation restricted account. And then those monies are specifically for capital for our fire fund.
Okay, one up. Write that down. So it's 815 per single family.
Correct.
Is that the one-time fee?
Yes. Yes, that's the meter fee, and then 41 per square foot for commercial and industrial.
And that's been in effect since 2016. Those have not changed in 10 years now.
Those were the rates that we were looking to increase recently.
No, just the water and sewer. We'd have to do a separate fee study for that. We're just looking at the water and the sewer
So
capacity fees.
when there is new development, like somebody's building a house, they need to pay this district certain fees. And they would pay a fire fee,
Yes.
and they would pay a water fee, and they would pay a sewer fee.
Yes.
Are those the only fees, or are there like other fees?
Will serve letter fee, a meter fee, so the cost of the meter.
Usually there's a will. Wait a minute. A will serve
Oh,
letter.
sorry. Well,
Isn't that like a hundred
you're
bucks?
talking about the inspection.
Yeah,
Yeah.
fee's a fee. I mean,
All right. Yep.
okay. So, okay. I guess the major fees are the cost of the meter, fire mitigation, water and sewer capacity fee.
A meter, fire, and what?
Water and sewer capacity fee.
When does the will serve letter come in? That's when somebody's building, right?
Now that's when you do a tentative map. When you do a tentative map and you want to
Tentative.
do subdivision,
Then you got the will.
you need to demonstrate where you're gonna get
Right.
your water and where you're gonna get rid of your sewer. So if you can get a will serve from a municipality, from a purveyor, then that resolves that issue.
And the only other thing, not to get out, all right, the only other thing is what we generally charge is 36 months upfront of energy costs for the street lighting. If you look at, we have a standard capacity fee sheet that talks about the water, the sewer, the fire, the street lighting.
And that's all collected before somebody gets a certificate of occupancy.
Before the meter gets dropped, all that needs to be paid.
So if you kind of look in on the fireweed portion of this up top, I've kind of broken out on lines, like I know it says 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, but on those top lines of where it says property tax, these are the types of property taxes that we collect that then go through the county. The county then pays us our portion, right? So we get secured, unsecured, and then RPTTF, which you might not be familiar with, but that's Redevelopment Property Tax Trust Fund money. So back in the day, they used to fund blighted neighborhoods with kind of bonds to help entice developers to come in, and then those bonds would be secured by the property tax that that neighborhood would then generate. Those got dissolved a few years ago by the state of California. So all those property taxes that came from those redevelopment areas now kind of go into this trust fund pool. And then they start divvying it out based on who owes money still on their debt service. And then there's a residual at the end, and all those kind of monies then just get kind of distributed out until all of the redevelopments have no longer have any more obligations and stuff like that. That is our primary source of property tax. And so I'm trying to break out those a little bit more so we can see what those are individually in our budgets and kind of see where those are going to go. And it's just more detail for us as we kind of look at this and evaluate certain things. So that's one little change I've done up top. So you might see a little bit of a difference between our prior year and our current year. And those are based, I can go take all that stuff. I get the detail from most of it's all through the Riverside County. We have a very tiny amount that comes from San Bernardino County. It's about $40,000, but the main majority of it is through Riverside County. And we get all those details and stuff like that. So this year, as I think Brian will talk about a little bit later, we're at the end of a 5-year contract with CAL FIRE for our fire contract. So then now we're going into a new 5-year kind of thing. I don't want to spoil his thunder. This is based on estimates from our current projected amount for the next year from the county. So those are the major revenues and costs for the fire fund.
I have a question.
Yeah.
How much do we pay the weed abatement officer from the fire department?
I believe that's like $78,000 a year. And we split
Okay.
that cost with the city of Prupa Valley. So I think they also pay $78,000. So I think in totality, he gets like 160, or at least his position gets 160,
Okay.
80 per jurisdiction.
Who is the weed abatement officer?
I think his name is Jared Adams.
Well, he's been around a while.
He's been around for a while.
Just right.
I think he's elevated to like weed abatement and like fire marshal status, so he does a lot of
Right.
business checks and stuff like that too.
Okay. So we have the guy that goes to the businesses and does a fire inspection for existing businesses, like making sure they have fire extinguishers and whatnot. Then there's somebody that looks at some kind of method to determine out if property has weeds that need to be abated. Is that the same person or that's different people?
I will have to get back to you, Director Murphy. I don't know for sure.
San Bernardino, it is a different person at San Bernardino, but that's not our county.
So then just as you can see, and then we kind of have excess property tax, right? So what, if you can look at this, you can see that, for the next year, if we estimate that we're going to get around $6.6 million in the fire fund, you kind of see that we only are going to have, about 3.8 in operating costs, right? So there's a gap there. And so then generally what we've been doing is subsidizing kind of the water and sewer funds and using that money to help keep rates lower. Right. So that becomes a little bit tricky because then, if that gap doesn't ever stay big, the other funds can end up getting hurt because they're not being proactive and being self-sufficient. Right. So that's one of the things that the district's kind of had to subsidize the other rates. One thing I want to show you is then also the one big number on here is item number 20, which is for capital improvements. So the fire station is in what year? Tw what 20
Yeah,
years
you're
old?
20. Yeah, you're 20.
We did retrofit. We worked with CAL FIRE to retrofit all of the lights in that facility to LEDs. So hopefully, if you drive around there at night, it looks a lot nicer and brighter. But the outside LEDs got retrofitted. The inside bay got retrofitted. All of the interior lights got retrofitted. And what we did this last year was we paid for the cost of the supplies, but then CAL FIRE did all the labor and didn't charge us. So we worked out a deal with them where they kind of agreed to do that. We replaced a water heater this year. Their water heater leaked and was not functional, so we replaced that. And we've done other things, but one of the biggest things that I'm looking at, and it's complicated and going to be a big thing, is the roof, right? So we've had roof fixes there, right? So then about this is from 2024, so it may be a little bit different. But these are, let me see if I can find the one. So for example, on this one, if you can kind of see in the shadows over there, you can kind of see this is what happened from that termite event we had a few years back, where the fire station got tented and then a lot of the tiles got cracked. So in 2024, we did kind of, you kind of see down over here in this bottom right corner, And then up over here in like in wide variety of spaces around the roof on this building, there are several cracked tiles in various different spots from where the roofers were walking around, probably with the tarp on. And on those tiles, I believe they kind of overlay each other. So if you don't step on them right where they're stacked, then and you step on the middle in between the tiles, then there's kind of like a gap under there. So my understanding is if you step on the middle, then it's not going to be structurally supported, and that tile probably broke because of where they were stepping, right? And unfortunately, we didn't have any liability on that for them. So this is my big project right now, where I've looked at estimates for redoing this roof entirely. And I'm trying to determine whether it's best to go with another material for the roof. If we lift and replace and just repair the broken tiles, because I know more are going to get broken off, but there's hundreds, if not thousands, of tiles up there that are broken.
What are some of the estimates you got for that tile?
The
I'm gonna say 100 grand.
I've had one person tell me 100, but they were not on the roof and they did not see the
I'm gonna
pictures.
go with what they call a single ply roof with and with the metal on
So
top of
yeah,
that.
so trust me, I'll bring up all the options because it's a big one. So I'm trying to do my homework before I bring this to the
Yeah, I was
board for
gonna say that's
discussion.
a plus
But
for
the
sure.
most recent one I got was, I believe, 320 to replace all the tiles and the roof with the same material, and it was 420 to do a steel
Tells us
roof.
to build that place 20 years ago.
So I'm trying to go through and get all the information so that way we can decide what's the best option. But in this year's budget, I really do, it is important. Like you can see like where it's been leaking, it needs to be maintained. And the need is there. It's just what do we want to do? So I'll give you that information later when I can gather all the stuff, but I'm trying to explore all assets, all options, because I want to make sure we take care of that place and we don't just lift or replace and then have the same issue later.
All right. Yeah.
We could stop referring to the broken tiles as caused by termites
Yeah.
and
Okay,
refer
well,
to it as that
termite
termite
killer.
contractor
Yeah. All right. Yes.
So
Yeah.
that was that was they have to put those tarps up there,
Yeah.
and they were walking around on that roof and they heard those tiles breaking and they didn't
Like
care.
potato chips. Yeah.
And so we have to figure out whether or not we're going to replace the broken tiles or replace the roof.
Yes.
And it's going to
Ongoing.
be expensive. Either way.
That's what the fire mitigation monies are for. That's the restricted monies that we can pull from that we generally do not use.
Yeah. So I'm trying to do my homework on that, so we're being all options, and I'm taking it seriously. I want to make sure we don't just wing it and set ourselves up for failure if something like that happens again, and we don't want that to happen.
Roof like that's supposed to be a 50-year roof, I think. Yeah.
Cars last a long time unless you crash them into a pole. And roofs will last a long time unless you get up there and break it.
Yeah, well, that's it.
That's my neighbor's tree attacked my roof. I had to replace about 20 tiles. It took me a couple of weekends. Wasn't that the roof wore out, it's that it was damaged. And that's what happened to this roof. And that's what that termite contractor did.
And then last fund, solid waste fund. This is an enterprise one. This is generated by customer bills. Right. And this is one that's basically a contract, right? So we contract this out to Birtech. We don't hold any assets in this fund, right? We don't have equipment in this fund. We don't have trucks that we need to replace. It's all to Birtech. So really the main goal of this fund is to break even as much as possible, right? We don't want to have it go underfunded, but we want to balance it to where it basically just kind of pays it off. We don't really have an enticement to make revenues and stockpile revenues from the trash fund. You kind of just want to balance it out, make it even. So I think Brian will go on this one too, because I do believe the next year rates for the trash fund are coming out. But that's what this one is all about, as far as the trash fund. It's pretty simple. So then you just basically have a percentage of the total revenues that we collect, the admin fees we take off the top, and the amount that we end up sending to Birtech. So we collect all of the revenues. Then we do a calculation and say, hey, what's Birtech's share? And Martha puts that in the AP packet. So whenever you see that payment out to them, that's after we've kind of retained our cut and we're sending them their share.
I just want to comment. I know we're kind of running out of time. I just want to comment on that. So as Kirk mentioned, this is kind of a break-even thing for us. If you do refer to the detailed budget, so you will see, well, I've been here for 7 years, and in my 7 years, the trash enterprise has never been self-sufficient. We've always had to subsidize the trash fund from excess discretionary property tax revenues. This board made a conscious decision 3 or 4 years ago to start upping what we call this residential admin fee, which was a quarter for 20 years. Made a conscious decision to up that so we can become more of a break even. So you'll see, I know that this budget is still subject to change, but if you look at the detailed budget, it does appear for this year we will finally achieve that goal where the trash is break even. So I just wanted to highlight that.
That one's a little tricky to kind of predict. The other one of the line items there is roll-off revenue. So, right, there's roll-off, which is like when construction happens and they're getting an extra bin or something. Those revenues are actually up this year, but it's just hard to say it's going to be consistent because it's totally dependent on activity too. So that has helped us as well, though. And that concludes everything I have for you. If you have any other questions, if something pops up, send me an email. We know we can sit down, but that's for
I have some questions. The columns on this form here, there's six of them. Trying to figure out what is the column for the proposed budget for next year.
The far right column.
That's where it says adopted 25,
Yes, 26. We did not update
So
that date. Sorry.
that word there is
yeah,
proposed.
yeah.
All right. And then on page, on the general fund, page 102, line item 40, I'm guessing that's both of those lines are both of those, that there is one line item, number 40, that has like eight words in it.
No, it's actually two line items. I just don't go through the detail of changing the numbers all the time just because
Okay,
they change.
so
So it's two separate line items.
outreach and community events is different than employee education and training, or they're the
Yeah,
same
they're
thing.
different.
Okay. All right, and then I noted that
So,
for attorneys' fees,
water.
that's not all of the attorneys we have, but that's the attorney for personnel.
Yes, he helps us with the employee handbook and for MOU stuff and for other personnel related issues.
Okay. So I want to make sure I'm understanding this correctly, where we're talking about fire and weed abatement. There's five different items coming in for taxes, and then we transfer out to four different funds, property tax money. Is that right?
So historically, but not if trash is self-sufficient, general fund is good because of the excess interest income. We only anticipate transferring out to water and sewer.
Okay, so the rightmost column is the proposed budget for next year, and the proposed property tax transfer out for next year is, I've seen on the
They'll be at
last
the
year.
bottom. Since those budgets are in progress, I try not to put that information down there, but they'll be on there eventually of what's proposed
Okay,
on there.
so we're anticipating next year that we will supplement the cost of trash, water, and sewer with property tax funds, but we don't know that amount.
Yeah, it's
Okay.
just because it's such a work in progress, I try not to put those on there until I know kind of firm costs first, and then we work on those.
Solid. Then the last comment is, if you could print out a slideshow.
Oh,
Give me a hard copy
yep.
with page numbers on it. That'd be super helpful.
Sure can.
Any other questions before we break momentarily? Or okay.
So we don't need to adjourn. We're just going to break.
Oh,
No, we do.
yeah, we can
Adjourning is
adjourn it and then
premature.
start it back up again in a couple minutes.
Okay,
Yeah.
so we are adjourning at 3:59. The budget finance. Maybe.
Hi, Ross.
What's going on here?